With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Try not to draft these top busts this season. Let's talk to the pros. Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. My name is Ryan Wormley. Joining me today are Andrew Erickson and Matthew Friedman. And Friedman, thank you for joining us on your big day.
It is my waffle day. Waffle, the International Waffle Day. And honestly, I don't know how I'm going to celebrate because my wife is gluten-free. So it's not like she's going to come home and I'm going to be like, great news, babe. We are going out and having breakfast for dinner. I don't think she's really going to be into that.
That is a real shame. Erickson, let me ask you this. Rank these three: pancakes, waffles, and French toast.
I'm going with pancakes, waffles, and then French toast. Just the order that you gave it to me.
Ugh. Well, first of all, it's a terrible order. Pancakes is a clear third. Friedman, what would you pick?
French toast is number one. I'm just going to say that. French toast, number one. Waffles, you know, honestly, for the guy who's so into waffles, I'm going to put pancakes number two, and then waffles number three. The thing is, like, in theory, I like waffles more. But I feel that pancakes are kind of more crushable. Like, those are the ones that I would probably have more regularly. Like, pancakes, you can easily make pancakes. Waffles, it's like you got to have the waffle iron. I feel like it's a little more of a production to make waffles.
You can easily make pancakes, but why would you? They're not good. It's not an enjoyable breakfast food. French toast, I agree, is the clear number one. Waffles, the clear number two. Pancakes, like I said, the clear number three. As always, I want to make sure the listeners can find the three of us online. Friedman's Twitter handle is at MattFTheOracle. Erickson's Twitter handle is at AndrewErickson_, and I can be found at Ryan Wormley. And of course, we can be found everywhere online at Fantasy Pros. I also want to mention an awesome prize Fantasy Pros is giving away to the listeners right now. We've got a free signed Davante Adams jersey giveaway over at fantasypros.com/contest right now. All our listeners have to do is subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros, take a screenshot and submit it at fantasypros.com/contest to have a chance to win. I also have to mention probably my single favorite tool that Fantasy Pros offers this time of year. That is the Draft Assistant. With draft season now here, it's time to take advantage of our Draft Assistant with Sync. The Draft Assistant provides advice and pick suggestions for your live online drafts in real time. It works with all the most popular league sites like Yahoo, ESPN, Sleeper, CBS Sports, NFL.com, and more. Plus, it's got the same interface as the draft simulator, so it has that familiar look and is very easy to use. Only MVP and Hall of Fame level subscribers can access it, so please subscribe today if you haven't already, and check out our draft assistant with Sync at fantasypros.com/draftwizards. And since only premium subscribers can get the most out of our draft assistant, if you're not currently a subscriber, then we're offering you an amazing deal that gets you premium for 6 months without paying us a dime. You can check out that deal at fantasypros.com/offers. Fellas, let's jump into it. Today, we're going to talk about the top busts in fantasy drafts this season. And for this show, you guys are going to hear us talk about the overall consensus half PPR ADP information. Listeners can find that at fantasypros.com/rankings. But we're not limiting our choices today, so the two of you can feel free to pick any players you want at any cost who will bust this season. We're going to start from 10 and go to our number one busts each. Friedman, go first.
Before I give my first pick, I have a little filibustering preamble, you know, pulling the curtain back on the show. To provide as much value as possible, we want to cover 20 players total, and there's overlap in our top 10 bust candidates. So Erickson got into the sheet first, the little go-getter that he is, and he put his top 10 in there, his actual top 10, which means that the 10 guys I'm highlighting in the show are not my actual top 10 bust candidates. You know, scandalous. But they are 10 guys that I am fading either because I think they're priced too high or they don't have upside or they're too risky, whatever. Like all those things are slightly different, but they all point in the direction of potential bust. And so I figured that since this isn't my quote unquote real top 10, I take the opportunity to highlight some guys I might not otherwise talk about. Like we have been in the buildup to the season for months. And so on the show, like we've collectively talked about, I don't know, like 250 players, maybe, you know, but there are some guys that we've talked about way more than others. And I feel like we don't need to hit on some of those guys like Allen Robinson. No one wants to hear a fifth A-Rob rant from me. Like that's unnecessary. If you want to hear my thoughts on A-Rob, go back to the episode where we talked about risky draft picks last month with JJ Zacharyson. On the site, I have articles on guys I'm never drafting, players to avoid, high risk running backs and wide receivers. You can check all of that out there to get a fuller sense of the players I'm skeptical about, one of whom, ranked number 10 on my list, is Hunter Renfrow, Las Vegas Raiders. His ADP wide receiver 34, 86 overall. I have him at wide receiver 47 and 111 overall. All right, so again, the ADP tool, you should check it out. It pulls in data from ESPN, Yahoo, Sleeper, Fantrax. It's a great resource. His ADP there, I think, is kind of, it's too high. It's within the range of the draft where I want to target upside. And despite Hunter Renfrow's production last year, I think he lacks the same upside this year. So obviously much more target competition with Davante Adams. Obviously get that jersey. Much more target competition with Davante Adams, who we'll be talking about later. Both more target competition overall and in the red zone. And that's really where I think Renfrow is going to take a hit. So I'm looking right now in our advanced wide receiver stats report. Last year, Renfrow was number 5 in the league with 23 targets in the red zone, but Adams was number 3 with 27. There's just not enough targets, especially enough targets near the end zone to go around for both of those guys and Darren Waller. So at his ADP, I think Renfrow has a fine floor, but I don't like his ceiling, and ceiling is what matters at his ADP.
I want to have a little more of a conversation about the Raiders offense with you, Friedman, later on, because there are multiple Raiders players that we're going to be talking about today. So we'll circle back to that in a bit. Erickson, who's your number 10 bust?
Yeah, so for my list, I did get my top 10, as Friedman alluded to, and I spent a long time on creating this list because there are a lot of guys I could have put on here that I wanted to talk about, but I really tried to capture, okay, where are they going in drafts? How much do these guys actually matter? And are these people, you know, are people drafting these guys as starters? And am I in a place where I should say, no, like you do not want to draft this player as a starter? And that kind of brings me to number 10 with Mike Gesicki, who's going as the tight end 11, 113th off the board. So he's being drafted as, hey, I drafted Gesicki. He's going to start week one for me. You do not want to have Mike Gesicki starting in your tight end slot. So he's playing a totally different role than he has played in years past. 94% slot snap rate last year. He's really been a slot wide receiver despite being a tight end by position name over the last, basically since entering the NFL. And the thing with Gesicki is you look at the tight ends that operate in this 49ers type of scheme with Mike McDaniels bringing over, you're hoping for yards after the catch. Like that's really what you're hoping for. And that's the one thing Gesicki has never shown that he can do. He doesn't break tackles and he doesn't create yards after the catch. Last year, 41st out of 42 qualifying tight ends in terms of yards after the catch per reception. So he's not even going to be able to take advantage of the certain scheme that he's in. He's already splitting snaps with Durham Smythe. He's blocking more than ever. I mean, he had to play out into the second team offense in the preseason because he's essentially learning a new position. Like, he's not playing the same tight end role he's played historically. So with two top receivers, with Waddle and Hill, he's competing for targets for a more run-heavy offense. I mean, the Dolphins threw a ton last year. I don't expect that to happen this year. Gesicki is just that middle-range tight end that it's like, you know what? I'm just going to wait way longer, and I'll probably get the exact same production. I don't have to pay for it than paying for Gesicki at the tight end 11.
Yeah, as you mentioned, he's currently tight end 11. You would have him at tight end 19. That's actually the range of our tier three on the expert consensus rankings, is tight end 11 to tight end 19. So there's a pretty wide range of players there that are all sort of jumbled to a degree. Before we move on from Gesicki, I am curious, there were some news reports earlier this morning about him being involved in some trade discussions with the Dolphins. Is there a team that he could go to that then you would be a lot higher on him?
I mean, any team that's going to use him as a slot receiver, you know, just kind of off the cuff, thinking of teams. I mean, the Packers could use another tight end, depending on if Robert Tonyan, you know, if he comes back, that obviously would be a big upgrade. I mean, the Giants, you know, have a rookie tight end that's starting, so he would obviously probably be, you know, in the head of the pecking order. So those are some teams that kind of come to name.
Friedman, I'm curious to hear how you justify your number nine bust, who is currently going 269th overall, which is not an area that you typically see a lot of busts in draft season.
I don't have to justify it. That's the answer. My justification is that Erickson took all the players I wanted to talk about. But no, I'm talking about Adam Trautman, who's going 31 at tight end. Now, the reason why I wanted to talk about him is twofold. One, because there are some people who are, you know, getting into those best ball streets, and Trautman is someone who is routinely drafted in best ball, not really being drafted in redraft leagues. But I also want to call attention to him now in case he scores a touchdown early in the season and people might think about dropping, let's say, a tight end who's actually getting snaps but who's underperformed to that point in order to pick up Trautman. I have a few pieces on Fantasy Pros that look at preseason usage, you know, what we've seen in weeks one and two. And one of those pieces looks at all of the position battles in the league. And this position battle is nasty. You've got Adam Trautman, Taysom Hill, Juwan Johnson, and Nick Vanette. All of those guys, it's a full-blown committee. All of them, all four players, have gotten first-team snaps in the preseason. In week two, all of them played with the first team, and Trautman seems to be the guy who's falling behind. He played just four first team snaps in week two, and in weeks one and two, he's ran only three first team routes. That is horrible. He's playing well behind Juwan Johnson on the first team. Like, people generally still view Trautman as like maybe the co-number one on that team with Taysom Hill, but Trautman might actually be the number four tight end on the team right now. Like, no one should even be thinking about talking about him on a podcast, which I'm breaking the cardinal rule right now, but like, no one should be thinking about drafting him at all, picking him up on waivers, anything like that. Like, he should be discarded until he's actually like running the most routes out of any of those tight ends. And that's not happening.
Well, I'm going to follow your rule and not talk about him anymore. Erickson, who's your number nine bust?
Number nine for me is DeAndre Hopkins for the Arizona Cardinals. So he's wide receiver 39 ADP. I have him wide receiver 51 outside of my top 100. And it's just because of the suspension and how I like to play fantasy football. I don't want to have this anchor on my bench that I can't put my IR spot because he's suspended. He's not hurt. So you have to clog a roster spot with DeAndre Hopkins for 6 weeks when the beginning of the waiver wire period is so critical. Like, this is when you get the opportunity to pick up a Cordarrelle Patterson, to pick up an Elijah Mitchell, guys that are league winners, but you're not going to have that luxury because you're going to be holding on to DeAndre Hopkins because he's DeAndre Hopkins. But last year, we didn't get DeAndre Hopkins like we were used to. He battled through injuries. He had one game with double-digit targets, two games with more than 80 receiving yards. In 2020, he had eight games with double-digit targets and went over 80 receiving yards seven times. So we're starting to see, I think, a little bit of a decline from DeAndre Hopkins. We don't know how he's going to then mesh into the offense with Marquise Brown now entrenched in the Arizona Cardinals offense. You have Rondell Moore entering into year two. They have more tight ends. So I just think that you're going to be holding on to Hopkins, and then maybe he comes back and is a, you know, wide receiver two for you. And it's like, you really want to give up 6 weeks for a wide receiver two when you could have just drafted a bunch of wide receiver twos in the first place that you could just be playing instead. I just think that you're not really gaining any value. You're not appreciating any value on your roster. You're just holding on to Hopkins, and then you're hoping that he just produces something for you. I just can't do that on my rosters.
Let's jump ahead to October. When he returns, obviously there will be shifts in the rankings between now and then. But based on what we know now, when he returns, Erickson, where do you think you're going to have him ranked rest of season?
I mean, I probably would put him in the top 24. I think it really depends on, you know, how is Marquise Brown doing? Like what is he doing in the offense? Has Rondale Moore like really taken a step forward? So if one of those guys gets hurt, you know, one of those guys is just it's not happening for Rondale Moore, okay, like you can feel confident about Hopkins being a weekly starter. But I just don't think he is going to be a wide receiver one when he comes back. And for that, it's like, if that was a guarantee, I'd be like, okay, I would reconsider, you know, holding the roster spot because I know how good he can be when he comes back. But it's a long time off. And even when he comes back, it's actually on a short week. They actually play on a Thursday night, week 7. So short game plan. I just don't want the headache of the roster management.
Friedman, you're actually 30 spots higher in your rankings on Hopkins. Is that a philosophical difference, not minding the suspension, or do you have higher expectations when he returns?
Well, I think higher relative to, to Erickson, but I wouldn't say I'm high on Hopkins at all. Like, I have very minimal exposure to him. When he returns, the absolute highest I can imagine having him ranked is as a like low end wide receiver one, if things have just gone horribly with Marquise Brown and Rondale Moore isn't progressing. But I think like more realistically, he's probably going to slot in as like a mid range to low end wide receiver two for me.
Before we move on with today's show, I'd like to take a moment to talk about No House Advantage. No House Advantage is changing the game by offering the most dynamic fantasy sports platform available today. Play in pick'em contests against other people for the shot at winning over $150,000 in cash. Download the app, choose a contest, select your player props, earn points for correct picks, and climb the leaderboard for your shot to win big money every week. You can also test your skills versus the house and 20 times your entry if you hit all your picks. Bet on up to 5 player prop over-unders or individual player matchups across every major sports league, including NFL, NBA, MLB, PGA, MMA, and NASCAR. Sign up now with promo code PROS at nohouseadvantage.com or download the app in app stores to get a first deposit match up to $25. Make sure to check out No House Advantage today and experience daily fantasy sports redefined, because it's not just how you play, but where you play. You won't want to miss out on this. Friedman, let's stick with you for your number 8 bust.
Okay, I am looking at Josh Jacobs, running back 21, 45 overall by ADP. I have him ranked RB25, number 57 overall. Just look at everything that has happened to Josh Jacobs or around him since head coach Josh McDaniels arrived. So there's the new regime. They refuse to pick up Josh Jacobs' fifth-year option. They've basically already signaled to him and to the market that he's not important to them. They drafted 2 running backs, Zamir White and Britton Brown. White especially is a threat with his athleticism and running style. They signed Brandon Bolden and Amir Abdullah in free agency. Right, Bolden is a special teams ace, but he also has pass catching capability if needed. And Abdullah, I think, is ticketed for the James White role within that offense after not playing in the preseason in weeks 1 and 2. Jacobs played in the Hall of Fame game. He hasn't played in weeks 1 and 2. So like, yeah, he's locked in as the lead back, but it's the lead back in a committee. And the fact that they played him in the Hall of Fame game is just a little bit weird. Jacobs is going to lose some early down work. He's going to lose rotational series to Zamir White, and he's going to lose passing down work to Amir Abdullah. That Raiders offensive line, it's mediocre. We have it ranked in our offensive line rankings as number 22, and that feels a little bit high, to be honest. The offense will probably be good under McDaniels, but we don't know that for sure. Like, there's the uncertainty of the unknown around Josh Jacobs. And the Raiders are number 4 in their division, right? As much as they've improved this year, they're still the worst team in their division. And they're going to be in a lot of shootouts with the AFC West and the NFC West. So there could be fewer opportunities for Jacobs to carry the ball, because honestly, the team just can't afford to give him carries because they need to keep up with the opposing offenses they're going against. So you put all of that together, and he looks like a potential version of Antonio Gibson, whom I'm sure Erickson is going to talk about later.
Does the release of Kenyon Drake move the needle at all for you in how you rank Jacobs, or no?
No, I already had Drake listed as a potential cut candidate And so this really doesn't change anything for me with Jacobs. If anything, it solidifies Zamir White as someone who is going to be a rotational part of that backfield. And I think that's actually more damaging for Josh Jacobs, because Zamir White is young, like a rookie. He's got some upside. Like, Kenyon Drake doesn't have that left.
Jacobs is the second of three Raiders that you have on your list here, Freeman, which again is not your true top 10 necessarily. But just on the offense in general, are you down on Derek Carr as well? Because you're mentioning a lot of the players that he's going to be working, you know, obviously throwing to the other guys, working in the offense with Jacobs. Does that mean that you're not quite as high on him as some in the industry?
I'm not like particularly low on Derek Carr, but he's the exact type of quarterback I never want to draft in fantasy. You know, like, he doesn't have any running ability. He's an okay pocket passer, but it's not as if he's like prolific like Brady or something like that. So he just hits like all of the wrong boxes for me, where like, I'm not going to be drafting him anywhere except for maybe a best ball scenario where he falls and I can stack him.
Let's put a pin in the Raiders for now. We'll be back to them again later. Erickson, your number eight bust.
I'm going to go with Adam Thielen for the Minnesota Vikings. He's wide receiver 33, ADP, 74th overall. I have him wide receiver 54, 141st overall. Basically, I just don't want people to draft Adam Thielen, because I think I'm in a scenario where he hasn't finished as a top 20 wide receiver in terms of over half of his games the last two seasons. So he's finishing outside the wide receiver two territory more than half the time. He's entering his 32-year-old season, and really, his production is just buoyed by touchdowns. Like, he's scored 24 touchdowns since the start of 2020, which is actually more than he should have expected to be based on his targets and yardage totals. His touchdown number should be closer to 16. So it's still a lot of touchdown production, but when you look at the scopes of this Minnesota Vikings offense, Dalvin Cook, massive candidate for touchdown regression to work in his favor. Dalvin Cook scored 6 touchdowns last year. He was averaging 16 the 2 years prior to that. You have Justin Jefferson. Is Adam Thielen going to keep scoring more touchdowns than Adam Thielen? Like, Justin Jefferson? I can't imagine a world where Jefferson just continues to get outproduced by Thielen in the end zone when Jefferson has been so good over his first 2 years in the NFL. I think Jefferson, this is the year he's going to finally cash in on those end zone targets, and that's going to come to a detriment to Adam Thielen. You know, his age, I think, is going to be coming up. He's going to start catching up with him a little bit. Lowest PFF receiving grade and yards per route run since he became a starter in 2016. He dealt with some injuries last year, ankle injuries, lower body injuries. Like, these are not good signs for a guy that's 32 years old. I mean, people are worried about Michael Thomas. He's 29 years old. Like, Adam Thielen is 3 years older than Michael Thomas. And we're just kind of drafting him as a wide receiver 3, thinking he's going to be there in the long term. I don't think so. This is when we see receivers start to fall off. And I like KJ Osborne a lot too. So I think that this Thielen is someone I just don't draft.
Friedman, this is actually the player that you guys have the biggest disagreement on. You are 45 spots higher on Thielen in your rankings than Erickson is. Are you just bullish on Kevin O'Connell's offense coming to Minnesota? Or is there something about Thielen that you're still buying in on?
No, it's fine. I don't know what this is. I think it's just that Erickson is so low on Thielen.
Yeah, because, like, I just don't want people to draft. Like, I want them to see him and be like, all right, don't draft Thielen. Like, he'll never, ever show up in your team if you're following my rankings.
Yeah, like, I have Thielen ranked, I believe, below his ADP in terms of, like, drafts that I'm doing. I'm never targeting Thielen. So, like, I have him written up as, like, someone I'm never drafting again. So it's honestly, I would have had Thielen on my list if not for Erickson. So I definitely do not want to be put in the role of, hey, Friedman, make the bull case for Adam Thielen. I just don't want any part of that.
All right, well, let's go from a veteran to a rookie. Who is your bust number 7, Friedman?
I'm looking at Garrett Wilson with the Jets. His ADP is wide receiver 50, number 119 overall. I have him at wide receiver 56, 134 overall. I'll just say, like, for a blanket statement, super talented player, right? Great NFL draft capital. Long-term, I think things could be good for him, but his quarterback situation right now, it's pretty bad. And his preseason usage is concerning. In week one of the preseason, Elijah Moore, Corey Davis, and Braxton Berrios, all of those guys played significantly more first-team snaps than Wilson, who played literally just one snap in week one with the first team. Eventually, Wilson should overtake Davis and Berrios, but both are likely to get enough usage throughout the season to slow Wilson down. And early in the season, we might be really surprised by how little Wilson is involved within that offense. So Long term, I still like Wilson. In the short term, I'm going to be a little bit bearish.
Erickson, who's your next bust?
Number seven, I have Damian Harris for the New England Patriots. He's RB 26, 63rd overall ADP. It's just way too high for Damian Harris to be going there when, I mean, I don't even have him as my highest ranked Patriots running back. Like, I have Ramondre Stevenson ranked ahead of Damian Harris, so that's the Patriots running back that I'm taking. Look, Stevenson just has a higher ceiling than Damian Harris does. You know, we've heard some rhetoric from Patriots camp, from Belichick, talking about how they're going to be used on all three downs, so they're not necessarily going to be rotating backs as much. But, you know, Stevenson has the receiving profile. Like, Damian Harris doesn't. So that just doesn't really stick to me that, oh, Harris will be used on all three downs, when he's literally never been that ever in the NFL, where Stevenson did flash as a receiver last year. And Stevenson forced a 50-50 split between the two backs at the second half of last year. He had better usage in terms of expected fantasy points per game than Damian Harris did. Harris had 15 touchdowns last year. Like, that's not going to be sustainable year over year if Stevenson is matching his touches, potentially working more as a receiver and potentially taking away touches in the red zone. So for me, Harris is someone you're just hoping he holds on to his value. But it's just, he looks like a depreciating asset, where Ramondre looks like a rocket ship to the moon. And I want to ride the rocket ship. Sorry.
If Montgomery ends up being the running back that gets the bulk of the James White workload out of the backfield catching passes and not Stevenson, would you still have Ramondre ahead of Harris?
Yeah, I think Ramondre is a better running back in terms of how they use him in space. You know, Damian Harris is a better in between the tackles rusher, but the Patriots are also changing their scheme, you know, how they're going to be running the ball this year. So that may be more beneficial towards a style of runner like Ramondre Stevenson, where they're getting him more into space versus Damian Harris. And the thing with Ty Montgomery is that guy, look, he's a running back slash wide receiver for a reason. Like, he is built like a twig. I really don't think that he's going to last the entire year. And when he goes, if he goes down, you know, maybe week one, it comes out, oh, the Patriots backfield, it's a friggin' mess. Ty Montgomery will be on IR by week four and then speak, oh, wow, Stevenson show, let's go.
I just have to say, imagine Erickson calling a dude who's like 6'2", 220 a twig.
He is not 220. There's no way. Ty Montgomery?
Yes, he is. At least Erickson. he was when he entered the league.
Oh, okay. Yeah, when he was didn't he enter as a running back, or was he a receiver?
No, he was a receiver.
Okay. Well, he looks much skinnier.
The next time you're at Patriots camp, we got to get a side-by-side comparison between you and Ty Montgomery. Before we move on with the show, I'd like to take a moment to talk about SeatGeek. Have you been treating your butt well lately? Has it been going places? No? Then you've got to try SeatGeek. There's nothing I love more than going to sporting events live, and SeatGeek is my choice every time I need to buy tickets. I just moved to Denver earlier this year, and I can't wait to explore all the professional and college stadiums the area has to offer. And when I do, I'm turning to SeatGeek. SeatGeek is so beloved, it's been made the highest-rated ticketing app for all types of events, including concerts, festivals, sports, and more. I can't wait to check out Russell Wilson in his first season with the Broncos, or check out the Avalanche as they look to defend the Stanley Cup. At whatever event you're excited to see live, you can find the best tickets with SeatGeek, which rates every available ticket from 1 to 10 to make sure you're getting the best possible deal. You can get $20 off your first purchase with promo code FANTASYPROS at SeatGeek.com or on the SeatGeek app. That's promo code FANTASYPROS for $20 off your first SeatGeek order. SeatGeek, get your butt in a seat. Download the app today. Reuven, let's move to your next bust.
All right, number six, I have Tyler Lockett with the Seahawks, wide receiver 38, 92 overall. I have him ranked wide receiver 39, 97 overall. So there's not a massive discrepancy in terms of ADP with my rankings. But I just have to say, like, he's someone I am never taking. And I have my season long projections posted for players at Betting Pros, and you can leverage those for the prop market. I have write ups for all of the props that I'm betting, and I'm taking the under on Tyler Lockett at 5.5 touchdowns receiving. I've been projected for 4.9. It's hard for a guy to catch touchdowns when he doesn't have a quarterback who's throwing any. Like, the Seahawks could be bad. They have the worst quarterback situation in the league. I have them power rated as a bottom three team. They're likely to be as run heavy as they can possibly be, and that is flowing down to all of the projections that I have for the Seahawks pass catchers. And so at his ADP, I don't think Lockett has the upside needed for me to want him. Like, I think in terms of like median outcome, he's fine, but he doesn't have the upside. And if there's no upside, that means he's basically all downside. So I'm viewing him as a bust candidate.
Yeah, you and Pat both had the Seahawks as a bottom three fantasy off or bottom three offense in general on the last show we did. Erickson, where do you have the Seahawks roughly in your offense power rankings?
I know. I don't know off the top of my head, but they're definitely in the bottom five. Like, they might be last, honestly.
And this will not be the last Seahawk we talk about today. Erickson, give me your number six bust.
Number six, Amari Cooper for the Cleveland Browns. Amari Cooper has just been a guy that never lived up to his potential as a first-round pick. He's always teased us a little bit. Maybe he can be great. I just don't think that's going to happen this year. So he was wide receiver 27 in points per game last year, playing in a high-paced Dallas Cowboys offense, indoors, pristine conditions for Amari Cooper to be a productive fantasy receiver. He had the third-highest bust rate behind only Tyler Lockett and Darnell Mooney last year among top 28 wide receivers. So now a new situation. Okay, he's the clear number one on the Cleveland Browns. Okay, that's nice. Clear quarterback downgrade going from Dak Prescott to Jacoby Brissett for at least the first 11 games. Okay, Deshaun Watson will come back eventually. We don't know how well he's going to play when he comes back. And they play one game inside, indoors. You know, Deshaun Watson's first game back December 4th at Houston. Amari Cooper averages 25 receiving yards fewer per game when he plays outdoors versus indoors. He's going to play in the Cleveland cold in the AFC North. Get out of here with Amari Cooper.
Friedman, you have Cooper as you're the only Fantasy Bros expert to have him as a top 24 wide receiver. You got him at 21. Are you not that concerned about Jacoby Brissett being there for a large part of the season? Why are you so much higher on him?
I will say I'm maybe a little bit too high on him, but I don't think I'm all that high on him. The thing is, I think he's got a pretty high target floor. Like there are very few other players in that offense who can really compete with him for targets. And I love how so cavalierly Erickson is able to look at Cooper, who had 1,000 yards receiving as a rookie, 1,150 yards receiving in his second year, his third year. Okay, fine. That sucked. But his fourth year, again, 1,000 yards receiving. His fifth year, 1,000 yards receiving. His sixth year, 1,000 yard receiving. We're talking about a dude who has like five career 1,000 yard campaigns.
Sounds a lot like Brandon Cooks.
But you're like, oh, this guy's horrible. Yeah. And Brandon Cooks, he's a top 24 wide receiver. Like, I feel like you just made my point for me by comparing him to Brandon Cooks, who like universally is ranked in this tier of like, well, he doesn't have a high ceiling, but he has a pretty decent floor. Like, that is where Cooper is for me. Like, and if you want to say that he's a bust candidate, like, I'm not going to push back all that much on it because I agree with you. Like, I don't think he has much upside, but I think he does have a fairly sturdy floor.
In Friedman's rankings, as of right now, Amari Cooper is 21st among wide receivers. Brandon Cooks is 20th. So they are neck and neck for him. Friedman, give me your next bust.
All right, number five, Cam Akers for the Rams. I have him at RB 20, number 42 overall. His ADP is RB 15, number 28 overall. So last summer, I loved Cam Akers, and then he suffered what I assumed would be a season-canceling and probably career-debilitating Achilles injury. He somehow returned to action last January. He was the lead back for the Rams in their championship-winning postseason run. All of that is great. But Akers was wildly inefficient last year, 2.6 yards per carry. He gets praised for returning quickly. I honestly don't think he should get credit for that because he looked like a guy who returned early from an Achilles injury, which is exactly what he was. Running backs historically have not returned to their pre-Achilles form, and he's already dealing with a soft tissue injury, and those tend to linger into the season. So on top of the Achilles thing, the hamstring thing might be something that slows him down or just derails his campaign. And on top of that, we have head coach Sean McVay, who has talked up Akers and Daryl Henderson as this committee. He said he feels like he has two number one running backs, and The Athletic's Jordan Rodriguez has reported that they both are splitting first team snaps in training camp. So all of that, I think, makes Akers very risky at his ADP.
The soft tissue injury and Daryl Henderson, I get that and accept that as a good reason, but I think he has to get some credit for returning so early, even if he didn't look very good, because if you're an outlier in how fast you can get back on the field, that would suggest, I would guess, I'm not a doctor, but wouldn't that suggest that you can be an outlier in terms of your long-term recovery as well?
Who's to say he actually should have been on the field? He looks like a guy who should not have been on the field.
I mean, yes, but the fact that he was there, I mean, I assume his team doctors, right, like, actually okayed it. It's not like he literally was, like, didn't have the medical clearance to be on there.
Well, yes, but what I'm saying is that he looks like a guy who was severely hampered by an Achilles injury. So why wouldn't we assume that that continues, even though he got onto the field faster? Like, this is an injury that, like, at a minimum, we've seen, like, a two-year window of guys needing to recover before they get up close to where they were before their injury. So if we're still thinking that he's in the two-year window and we truncate it a little bit, he should still be pretty affected by the Achilles tear.
That's fair. Erickson, let's move to your number five bust.
Going with Dave Montgomery, running back for the Chicago Bears. This one's just a layup, honestly. This one, he was easily in my top. He was one of the first guys I put in my top five. So last year, Montgomery basically had a top 10 opportunity share. It was a straight bell cow workhorse for the Chicago Bears. He finished as a top 24 running back in fewer than half of his games. So 46%. So, you know, he's kind of viewed as, okay, he's like a safe RB2. You know, the offense isn't great, but he's going to get the volume, so he'll be okay. That's, I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I mean, Khalil Herbert, you know, what they've talked about from Bears training camp is that Herbert's going to have a larger role alongside David Montgomery. And look, if you just watch the two players, Khalil Herbert's better, a better running back. Like, he's way more explosive a running back than David Montgomery is. And I just think that I'd rather take a shot on Herbert late. Montgomery gets an injury. We saw Herbert in the preseason take 100% of the snaps with the starters. So that's what I would bet on. I'm not paying a top 36 price tag, 35th overall for David freaking Montgomery on the Chicago Bears, who have one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL. So David Montgomery, I think, is just such an easy. I just don't see a world where if I don't draft him, he's going to like beat me. Like, how is David Montgomery going to beat me? Even if he finishes as a top 20 running back, RB 20 through 24, it's like, okay, well, I drafted a bunch of breakout wide receivers that got me there. So no to David Montgomery for me.
Yeah, I was really surprised when you sent me your list that he even is still 35th overall in ADP. It feels like the narrative has been that he's falling, but I guess that hasn't actually played out in drafts quite yet. Khalil Herbert did get carted off over the weekend. The field, he is back at practice today, so that doesn't appear to be a long-term injury there. Friedman, give me your number four bust.
All right, I'm looking at Chris Godwin with the Buccaneers. His ADP is wide receiver 22, 55 overall. I have him wide receiver 44, 108 overall. I probably need to move him up a little bit, but the thing is, like, I don't want anyone who sees my rankings to draft Godwin. He's not a lock to play in week one. He probably will, but he's not a lock to do it. And even if he does, this whole season, we shouldn't expect him to be as efficient as he was last year coming off of the ACL tear, which he suffered in December. So I think a hands-off approach to a guy coming off of that kind of injury is pretty smart. And then on top of that, the Bucs signed slot receiver Russell Gage. The slot is where Godwin has done his best over the past 2 years. And so with Gage there, they might need to move Godwin a little more to the perimeter where he's had less experience. And then they also signed, you know, future Hall of Famer Julio Jones. And, you know, it's questionable about how much juice he actually has in those legs. But what is not questioned is that when he's been on the field the past 2 years, he has 10.4 yards per target, which is like an incredibly elite number, top four in the league, up there with Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson, Debo Samuel, right? So when Julio has been healthy and on the field the last 2 years, he's been dominant. And so it just means that we've got Godwin probably going to be less efficient than he was last year, probably going to have fewer targets coming his way, and he might be starting the season slowly. All of that sounds horrible for a guy who's going as wide receiver 22.
This is sort of the reverse Adam Thielen, where Erickson, you are 32 spots higher on Godwin than Friedman. It's the biggest gap of any of his players. Is that just injury optimism from you?
Yeah, I think that's, I mean, because that's really the only question mark we have about if Godwin, when I first did my wide receiver rankings, Godwin was a top 12 guy, you know, before we kind of, you kind of dove into the injury and kind of figured out, you know, logistically when he would be coming back, when he would be returning. Like, if he's healthy and he's in the Tom Brady led offense, like, it's really hard to see him not being a top 12 fantasy wide receiver one. So I guess I am just buying a little bit more into him coming back a little bit sooner. And if he does get healthy down the stretch, like, I mean, I'd rather have Godwin over like a guy like DeAndre Hopkins. It's like, okay, if it takes 6 weeks for Godwin to come back, at least Godwin I can put on my IR spot. You know what I mean? So I guess I probably am just a little bit more optimistic from an injury standpoint.
Before we move on with the show, I'd like to take a moment to talk to you guys about Fantrax. Fantrax is the most customizable fantasy platform in the industry, offering the greatest fantasy experience for your dynasty, keeper, redraft, and best ball leagues. Fantrax's free NFL Fantasy Football League Manager is the most customizable, easy-to-use, and feature-rich platform in the industry. Coming from another service, Fantrax can import any of your current leagues and customize as needed. Whether it's football, baseball, basketball, hockey, college basketball, college football, golf, soccer, or NASCAR, if there is anything lacking in your current Fantasy League Manager, Fantrax likely has it. I started playing in leagues on Fantrax myself a few years ago, and now playing on other platforms feels so limiting. For everything from my Dynasty Fantasy Baseball League to the Devi League Startup Slow Draft I'm participating in literally this week, I play on Fantrax. It's so easy to switch, and there's a reason why fantasy players who try Fantrax make it the permanent home for all their fantasy leagues. Sign up for free today and be entered to win the Fantrax Game Day Experience, where we'll send one lucky fantasy league to an NFL game of their choice along with $6,000 towards travel. Simply go to Fantrax.com/fantasypros and sign up today. Just create a new league, join an active league, or bring over your existing leagues from another platform for free. Existing Fantrax leagues are automatically included in the giveaway, and the more leagues you create and join, the more chances you have to win. The winner will be selected on September 26, 2022, and will be contacted via email. No purchase necessary. That's Fantrax.com/fantasypros. Fantrax, the home of fantasy sports. Erickson, let's move to your number four bust. One of the guys that you have talked about all offseason long as a fade.
All right, here we go. Ezekiel Elliott, Dallas Cowboys, RB17, 29th overall ADP. I have him as RB23, 64th overall. He's actually moved up my rankings a little bit just because some of these other running backs have just torpedoed during the preseason. He hasn't, you know, his status really hasn't changed that much, but it's still not someone that I'm trying to draft. You know, you look at running backs, 1,800 plus touches at 27 years old. These guys see a dip in production, 1.3 PPR points per game. And we look at the touch load that Zeke's going to potentially get this year. You know, last year he had three fewer touches per game than the year prior. Tony Pollard had three touches more per game. Tony Pollard was the more efficient receiver in terms of yards per route run. He ranked third during the second half of the year. Zeke, 57th in yards per route run. So for me, I'm looking at Zeke. He's finished as a top 12 running back in 35% of his games the past two seasons. Last year, he had the highest bust rate among running backs that finished inside the top eight at 19%, tied with Najee Harris. And people talk about Najee Harris as like, oh, you can't draft this guy. He's going to be a bust on a terrible offense. Well, Zeke played on a good offense and had the same bust rate as Najee Harris did. So I understand people are, oh, well, he's healthy now. We say this about all these running backs. All running backs get banged up. All running backs play hurt. And, you know, I'm not giving any more excuses to Ezekiel Elliott. He hasn't delivered over the past two seasons. And if you look at what happens if his production decreases like some of those other running backs with his workload at 27 years old, 1,800 plus touches, he's going to be putting up mid-range fantasy wide receiver three production. Like, I can't imagine drafting Zeke over all of these breakout wide receivers in the middle rounds in rounds three and round four. Like, that's what I'm targeting. Zeke, sure, I think that he has a higher floor than a guy like a David Montgomery, but I just don't see him being a difference maker at this point in his career. Like, Tony Pollard has been so good with his touches. Dallas needs to win games. And I think they're going to realize like halfway through the year, they're like, you know what? We just got to stay with the ball to Pollard a little bit more because he's the more electric back with the ball in his hands. And I don't think Zeke's that guy anymore. So for me, Zeke is my number four bust candidate.
So in the running back dead zone, you'd clearly rather take receivers who have really high upside. But in that dead zone, who are some running backs that you would like better than Zeke if that's the way the draft fell, that you were taking a running back?
Yeah, so I am on the opposite side of the Cam Akers debate. I like Cam Akers because I know that people see an inefficient running back that's gotten hurt. I see a running back on a high-powered offense that averages 21 touches per game in playoff games when everything matters the most. So I like the upside with Akers from that perspective. And then guys like Etienne, guys like Breece Hall, you know, they're unknown, you know, commodities. That's why they're going in this range. It's not because they're dead zone backs. It's because we can't put them in the first and second round because they haven't proven it yet. But we have to by default, like, put them into this second tier of running backs with all these other guys who were just kind of like hoping that they hold on to their previous production. Like, that's why you have to rank Zeke. You know, you can't rank him lower than an RB2 because he's still a starting running back in the NFL for a good offense. But at the same time, you need to realize, yeah, you're just doing that because he has to be ranked there. When you're looking at receivers in this range that could have much higher ceilings than Ezekiel Elliott, and no one would be surprised if Tony Pollard has an even bigger role this year. So that's why I just want receivers in this range. And there's a couple other running backs, like I mentioned, that I prefer in this RB dead zone. I think Zeke's kind of like the typical RB dead zone back.
Friedman, let's move to your number three bust, the only quarterback on this list.
Yeah, I felt compelled by honor to put a quarterback on the list just so we would have someone to talk about at the position. It's Justin Herbert with the Chargers. His ADP as the QB3, 36 overall. I have him QB5, number 66 overall. And I talked about Herbert last month on the pod with JJ, but I felt like it was worth highlighting again, especially since I bet the under on both of his props for yardage, 4,700.5, and his touchdown total, 36.5. That touchdown total is the highest in the league. You can read more about why I'm making those bets and my projections for him at Betting Pros. I don't dislike Herbert. And I'm highlighting him really to make a point about the early quarterbacks. Like, first of all, I don't think you should be taking a quarterback this early in the draft. You can find guys who are good later in the draft. And if you want to take a quarterback early, you don't need to take Herbert, who's, in my opinion, in the middle of the tier of the top quarterbacks. Like, there's not much of a difference. Even if you think that he is the number three quarterback overall, I think there's not much of a difference between Herbert and the three or four quarterbacks who are going after him in ADP, and all of them are cheaper, significantly cheaper, some of them. And then I think some of the quarterbacks going after Herbert, like, honestly, you can see this in the rankings. Like, I have Herbert ahead of them. I have them ahead of Herbert. And so if you take Herbert in rounds three, rounds four, you're taking a risk by paying more for a quarterback than you need to. And that gives him less margin for error, and it makes it likelier that he ends up busting. If you're bullish on Herbert, like, that's fine. He could have an awesome season, but then I would say invest in him, not in fantasy, but by looking at the futures market. Like, bet on him to win MVP, for instance. Like, he's 10-1 at points bet, looking at our Betting Pros odds tool right now. Like, that's the better way to get your Herbert exposure. Don't do it in fantasy.
Erickson, you're 18 spots higher on Herbert than Friedman is. Is that a philosophical difference on early quarterbacks, or is that specifically about Herbert?
You know, I have six elite quarterbacks that I view, the top six guys by ADP, and I just want whoever is last. Like, I really don't care. So if Herbert's the last guy there, I'll take him. You know, if Mahomes is the last guy, I'll take him there. Like, Mahomes is someone that I kind of labeled as a bust on previous episodes because he usually goes second. Like, he's usually the second guy off the board. I'm like, no, like, I'm not taking Mahomes in round four when I could take Jalen Hurts in round seven. Like, that's what I would rather do. And I think Friedman kind of alluded to that as well. It's like, you just kind of take, I don't really view them too dissimilarly. And I get, you know, I think Herbert obviously has a lot of upside and he plays in a really good offense. So I get how he can have success this season. But there are other quarterbacks that I also realize can also have equally, if not more, success at a much cheaper price. So just be price sensitive, I think, when it comes to quarterbacks. And that's part of the reason why I didn't put one on my bust list, because it really depends on the draft room. Like, whichever quarterback gets drafted first, probably that isn't Josh Allen, is probably the most likely to be the bust in your league, because they have to be, you know, the quarterback too, when it's stiff competition compared to all the guys that go after them.
Just to follow up on Erickson's point, and I agree with the idea of taking the quarterback. Like, if you want to take one of these early quarterbacks, taking the bottom of the tier, taking the guy who falls to number six. And the reason why Herbert stands out to me as someone I wanted to highlight here is that, like, he never falls to number six in this range. Like, I've never seen him fall to QB6 in any draft. And so, like, he, to me, is like the one guy in this tier that you don't take because he's never available as the cheapest guy in the tier.
Erickson, let's go to your number three bust.
My number three is Deebo Samuel, wide receiver 17th overall ADP. I think this is one of the highest guys we have overall in the rankings. And it's tough because, you know, you see a pass, still have Deebo Samuel as a top 12 wide receiver. So you're asking, how can this guy be a bust? Well, I just don't think that his production from last year is something that you should really think is the expectation heading into 2022. Look, no wide receiver scored more fantasy points over expectation than Samuel did last year. If you look at his production, especially in the just overall, 30% of his fantasy points came from rushing alone. He had 365 rushing yards. He scored 8 rushing touchdowns, which is more than Dalvin Cook. Like, there was a lot of rushing touchdowns for Deebo Samuel. And he also scored 3 touchdowns of 75-plus yards. Now, I faded Deebo last year because I was afraid of what the offense would look like and what his role would be with Trey Lance at quarterback. Trey Lance never was the quarterback last year besides 2 games. So we never got to really see that play out. But I was concerned about, okay, if Trey Lance is the quarterback, we're going to see more rushing attempts from the QB position. We're going to see less of these dump-off passes to a guy like Deebo Samuel, who obviously is someone that makes a lot of their plays after the catch at the short to intermediate target level. I think we're going to see less of those in this new offense with Trey Lance at quarterback. Just because of his rushing ability, you're going to see less overall pass attempts from the offense. And then you also have the increased target competition from a healthy George Kittle and a surge in Brandon Ayuk. You cannot go on the internet and not find someone labeling Brandon Ayuk as the next breakout wide receiver. And I think it's warranted. Like, the guy is super talented and he's produced in the second halves of both his rookie year and last year. But, you know, if he's not in the doghouse in the first half of the season, you know, what do Deebo's numbers look like? And if Deebo doesn't take over this massive rushing role in the second half of the season when Ayuk was out of the doghouse and when Kittle was healthy, you know, where's Deebo Samuel's target share then? I just think there's a lot of question marks about this 49ers offense overall. And there's someone is going to bust from these 3 guys, from whether it's Deebo, whether it's Kittle, whether it's Ayuk, someone's going to bust. And if I'm being price sensitive, Samuel is the most expensive one out of the bunch. He's a second round pick across the board, wide receiver 7. So based on efficiency, which tends to be the least sticky stat that we can carry over from year to year, I can't pay the second round cost for a Deebo Samuel. And I think that he could finish very similar to Brandon Ayuk, if not behind Brandon Ayuk, because just last year we were ranking Ayuk ahead of Deebo Samuel. So why is that not in the range of outcomes this year? So for me, that's why Deebo Samuel is my number 3 bust.
You said one of Samuel, Kittle, or Ayuk will bust. Friedman's next bust is a different 49er.
Smooth transition there. Hat off to you. Elijah Mitchell, my number 2 bust. He's ranked 27. I have him 63 overall. His ADP is RB20, number 49 overall. Kyle Shanahan has had a different number 1 running back in each of his 5 seasons with the 49ers. Like, this guy is just a running back polygamist. Like, he cannot stay loyal to any one guy. I think that ends up flowing down to Mitchell this year, who, like, he played well last year. Like, there's no denying that. He came out of nowhere as a late round guy, 11 games, 1,100 yards. Like, he did well last year, but he is not built like a lead back at 200 pounds. And in my betting pros write-ups for running backs, I've highlighted him as someone I'm betting the under on for his yardage prop and his touchdown prop. He's got a hamstring issue that he's already battling entering the season. And last year, he had an assortment of, like, nicks and knacks that just, like, totally took him down. So even with 207 carries last year, he scored just 5 touchdowns. This year, you've got Trey Sermon, who is looking like someone who actually might be able to get some playing time. They drafted Tyrion Davis-Price in the 3rd round. Either one of those guys could get potential goal line carries. You have Jeff Wilson as someone who is starting in week 3 of the preseason because Mitchell isn't healthy enough to do that. The fact that the team drafted Davis-Price with the top 100 pick would seem to suggest that they're not fully satisfied with him, or they're not sure he's able to stay healthy. Again, that hamstring injury is something that has just, you know, historically slowed running backs down and has lingered throughout season. So it just seems so easy to stay away from Elijah Mitchell as the RB20.
And speaking of running backs whose teams took a 3rd round running back in this year's draft, I don't know if that was another good transition or not, Reuben, but Erickson, who's your next bust?
I mean, Ryan, if you just throw in some Disney transitions, then, you know, you'll be able to keep up with Joe. But Antonio Gibson for the Washington Commanders, he's RB24, 57th overall. I have him outside the top 65, outside the top 24 running backs, just because this is just looking like a freaking mess for Antonio Gibson here. You know, we look at what he was able to do last year alongside JD McKissick. You know, he was RB23 in the 11 games he played with JD McKissick with an 8% target share. So really the only boon to Gibson's fantasy value came when McKissick got hurt in those 5 games. Like, that's when we saw Gibson have a receiving role. It was like, oh baby, here we go. RB1 season, McKissick was supposed to leave. That didn't happen. And then the Commanders basically doubled down on destroying Gibson's fantasy value by drafting Brian Robinson and then proceeding to start him in the preseason games over Antonio Gibson. So I know people are trying to buy the dip on Gibson as, okay, well, you know, now he's this super cheap. Well, right now, he's not cheap still. Like, 57th overall, still way too high for Antonio Gibson. And I don't think you can even consider him until at least, like, round eight of your drafts. But even then, you know, the past two, or just last year, he was an RB2 in just 53% of his games. Like, he was really on the fringe of just kind of being an RB2. And the only reason he has had back-to-back RB1 finishes is basically because, you know, attrition. Like, he's just kind of been the guy that's been there at the end of the race, you know, not getting hurt necessarily, like playing through the pain and getting a lot of touches in this backfield. So adding Brian Robinson into the mix, his touches are going to come down, and I just don't see the path where Gibson is giving you the same type of upside that you were getting for him in years past. It's a different year, so I think we just need to adjust the expectations for him. He's been an RB2 really from a points per game basis the past 2 years. He really hasn't been an RB1, and I just think that people are too attached to that they'll take a shot on him and like, okay, he's like round five, like I'll take a shot on Gibson, when it's like week one, Brian Robinson can come out and be the starter, and JD McKissick is catching passes out of the backfield, and Gibson is returning kicks as the number one kick returner. So there's just a lot of ways where he fails, and I think they're just better options to draft than when Gibson's on the board.
Gibson, one of the most popular bust candidates in the industry this whole offseason. Friedman, let's get your final Raider on the list.
Yeah, we've been teasing this. Great setup, by the way, for us to be like, get your Davante Adams jersey. By the way, he's Friedman's number one bust candidate this year. But I should say, like, I love Davante Adams, like, in general. A fantastic career. I think the move to Las Vegas is really what sabotages his ability here to produce. And it's not like I'm massively down on him. I have him as the wide receiver 5, number 16 overall. In ADP, he's the wide receiver 4, number 11 overall. But I'll just say, like, this one feels really obvious to me. Adams is 30 years old this season. Like, he could just naturally start to slow down this year because of his age. He gets a clear downgrade at quarterback. I know he made the joke about going from one Hall of Famer to another. Derek Carr will not end up in the Hall of Fame. Hot take, everybody. Derek Carr is not a Hall of Famer. Adams has more target competition than he's ever had as a number one receiver. This just sounds horrible. I know he played with Carr in college, but he doesn't have the same like recent rapport with Carr that Renfrow and Waller do. Adams is probably not going to be used across the formation in the same way that he was used in Green Bay. The Raiders' offense this year likely won't be as good as the Packers' offense was last year, so fewer touchdown opportunities. And head coach Josh McDaniels, he's probably good, but he has had mixed results without Tom Brady in outside New England. Like, McDaniels, I think people are just a little too certain that this offense in Las Vegas is going to be good. Like, it probably will be, but we probably also need to build in like a little bit of humility into the assumptions that we have with this Raiders offense. They will probably be good, but that is not a certainty. And so you have all of this surrounding Adams, and I think it makes him a risky pick in round one, in the beginning of round two. And this, again, has nothing to do with his talent. I think in terms of talent, he's a top two wide receiver, top three wide receiver in the league. It's just the circumstances. And at his ADP, there's almost always someone available I like more, which means that I view him as a potential bust candidate. And at his ADP, he doesn't need to miss by much for it to have a significant impact on your team. Like, if he's just a low-end wide receiver 1 or a high-end wide receiver 2, that still hurts you quite a bit, given that you didn't take someone else when you took him.
Erickson, your number one bust candidate is also a star wide receiver.
Yeah, there were a couple of different wide receivers I was debating for the number one spot, but I thought the most obvious one, the one I was most confident in, is DK Metcalf for the Seattle Seahawks, wide receiver 19, 50th overall. I have him 54th overall, wide receiver 25. So I'm giving some recognition to DK Metcalf in his ranking, because there are a lot of receivers that play with bad quarterbacks and you want to give some credit to the talent. But with Metcalf as a top 20 guy, I can't buy that price. Like, Geno Smith and Drew Lock are the quarterbacks versus Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson has the second highest passer rating among quarterbacks with at least 100 starts. Geno Smith and Drew Lock have combined for a sub 80 passer rating in their career. I don't think that, you know, too many people are making the excuses for Metcalf. It's like, oh, well, he'll be fine. You know, he was fine with Geno Smith for a couple games last year. It's okay. We're not playing a couple games. We're playing an entire season. Like, are we really going to project this small sample size of DK Metcalf basically catching a bunch of long touchdowns for Geno Smith over a 17-game sample? I just don't think that's really the right way to approach this. Look at Metcalf. How does he find production? It's touchdowns. 32 touchdowns over his first three seasons. How many touchdowns is the Seahawks offense going to score this year? I don't think it's going to be a lot. Hot take. You know, right next to the Derek Carr Hall of Fame hot take. Like, and then when you look at the scope of the receiving core, DK Metcalf has never been the target share leader in this offense. The past two seasons, it's been him and Tyler Lockett basically deadlocked at the top in target share and in fantasy points per game. I know we talk about Lockett as a bust, but Lockett's wide receiver 40+. At least you don't have to pay a lot to get Tyler Lockett. Like, you're paying a premium still in the middle rounds for DK Metcalf when his production could just be equally as bad as Tyler Lockett's, where at least Lockett, you don't have to pay nearly as much. So, you know, if you're tying my hands behind my back, you're like, Andrew, you have to take a Seahawks wide receiver. You got to take a piece of this awesome offense. Like, I'm going to take Tyler Lockett. I'm not going to touch DK Metcalf. And I think one other point to make is Noah Fant being added to this offense. You look at last year when Metcalf's numbers really fell off during the second half of the year when Russell Wilson came back. You know, Gerald Everett was really productive down the stretch. Gerald Everett actually outscored DK Metcalf from weeks 10 through 16. A tight end outscored DK Metcalf. And Noah Fant is a better real-life tight end than Gerald Everett is. So for me, with more pass captures, bad offense overall, like, don't draft these receivers on bad offenses. Like, it can really be that simple. And I learned that lesson last year, and that's why I'm not touching DK Metcalf. That's why he's my number one bust candidate, DK Metcalf.
Guys, do me a favor and be careful as you come back from going out on those limbs with takes like Derek Carr is not a Hall of Famer and the Seahawks are going to be a bad offense.
Let's dig into the listener mailbag.
Let's open up the mailbag here to end the show. We're definitely going to hit on more of these as the draft season rolls on. But if the listeners want even more access to our analysts, be sure to join us on Discord at fantasypros.com/chat. A premium subscription will get listeners full access to our analysts through AMAs, stages, and more. At Ryan Sweeting 13 asks, how much value does stacking a solid QB and wide receiver actually have for your fantasy team? Ironically, he mentions the Raiders here. For example, Derek Carr and Devontae Adams, which I feel like may be one of the best stacks this season because of the college connection. Erickson, how do you feel about stacking in general?
Obviously in a best ball format, I think that it's definitely something you want to do and you want to definitely strategize for it. In a traditional redraft format where you're drafting your teams year to year, I don't think it's something you need to go out on your limb to necessarily do. Like, if you draft AJ Brown and you can get Jalen Hurts, it's like, okay, like, that's great. Like, do it. But don't reach two rounds ahead to get Jalen Hurts. Like, I think that that's overextending because, yeah, it's nice to have, but I think at the end of the day, I don't think it makes too much of a difference because you're playing in a 12-team league for the most part. You're only beating, you know, one person that week. You don't need to have the nuts score, which is why we always suggest stacking in these best ball formats because you're up against so many different competitors.
Freeman, quickly, what's your philosophy on stacking?
Yeah, I like stacking if it naturally flows to me, but like Erickson, I'm not reaching to do it. I will say, like, yeah, in any given week, you're trying to beat just one person, but in the end, you are trying to, like, be number one in the league, and I think stacking helps achieve that upside.
Let's wrap it up there, fellas. Thank you guys both for another awesome episode. Please be sure to remember all our awesome opportunities from today's episode, including the free signed Devontae Adams jersey giveaway, the Fantasy Pros Draft Assistant, and the chances to win with Fantrax, SeatGeek, and No House Advantage. Thank you, the fans, for listening. For Erickson and Friedman, I'm Ryan Wormley. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
Thank you.
With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast.
Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.